So, Jim, what do you want me to tell you?
About Daulat Singh in the new life, the story of his story.
Right. Dr. Daulat Singh's story you want to know? In the new life. Good. I don't know whether you are aware of the conditions of new life, because at the time when we went out to new life, we were aware of the conditions that we had to observe, you see, and we had to live through them. And the most important one was that we should remain cheerful all the time in Baba's presence. We must never have a long face in presence of Baba, as it is said, and that we should always keep cheerful, happy. Well, whatever be your feelings within you, that's a different thing. Nobody cared for that. But when you face Baba, you have to face him with a broad smile. Smile as when you call out cheese, you see. That's it. So that was one of the most important conditions, and failing, any failure in that would mean that Baba had the right to send his companion back to his home. Of course, there were many more conditions, but this was the most important one, and it was very difficult for us all. On 16th October 1949, we started with Baba for the new life. We went first to south of India, a place called Belgaum from here. There we camped, and it was called the training period for Baba's companions in new life. It was a sort of a training camp where Baba trained us. You see, it's very difficult when people are holding certain positions in life, when people had never bent themselves, so to say, or never cared to carry any loads or labored. It's very difficult to adjust one's life to circumstances which are quite extraneous, you see. Suppose a person who holds a very good position is very wealthy, and if he is all of a sudden told or commanded by God, you see, that just leave everything and go in the streets and beg for food, it will be very difficult for him. He won't be able to do it as he should do it. He will, of course, obeying the command of God, but he won't be able to adjust to the circumstances. So this training camp was meant for training. So at that time we were the women, the four women that went with Baba, and the rest of the men companions were camped, and Baba also was camped, and well, it was a happy period, no doubt. Baba was our head companion. One night it so happened, while I was with Baba, he woke me up from sleep, and he expressed his desire that he would like to take a round, you see, in the camp area, to see how his companions are. So I went with Baba, I went out, and he strolled hither, thither, and came to a spot where I spotted from a distance too, a man sitting. The rest of the people there, the rest of the companions were fast asleep. So Baba went behind the person, you see, and tapped on his back, and he got surprised. He was Dr. Daulat Singh there, and he was sobbing at the time. And he was so surprised to see Baba at the dead of the night there. And sobbing means he had broken the conditions. When he faced Baba, he ought to have faced him without any sobs. Well, Baba inquired there, and he said that, well, it was not much, Baba, and that he thought that he was all alone in the night, and therefore he ventured to give vent to his feelings. And Baba told him to relax and not worry, but that he had broken the condition of new life and he will be sent back the next day. So that's how Baba's keeping a watchful eye, you see, over his companions brings in a story which has touched our hearts ever since. It's all about Dr. Daulat Singh. So we went back, we slept. I don't know whether Baba slept or not. I don't know whether Baba ever slept. But we were all asleep. So, next morning, there was that, what do you call it, you see? A conference, you see, of all the companions and Baba at the head. And Dr. Daulat Singh was called. He was asked the reason why he was so sad, whether there was any difficulty for him to continue in his new life. Why was he sobbing? What was the reason for his weeping? Baba being the new life companion, he behaved like a human being as one of the companions, and Dr. Daulat Singh being an old man, he said, Baba, the only thing was that he was so, the only thing that made him sob was the thought of his daughter. The rest is such a rosy picture for him in this life now that he has dedicated to this cause. He couldn't dare to say the words at the feet of his master Meher Baba, because Meher Baba prohibited even that expression through speech, you see, in new life. He would want us to take him as our companion, as a friend, you see, as our elder brother. So he said, everything was fine with him except that thought, and that thought made him weep that last night. What was it? He said, her marriage was fixed prior to his having given that last word, prior to his leaving Ahmednagar for this new life. So Baba said, why did you, what made you weep? What's that in that? He says, when her marriage was fixed and I was the one who had taken a leading part, and the date was fixed, and the date was after 16th of October 1949, not knowing that we would have to leave for new life, all of a sudden Baba had called him there to Mehrabad along with other people there to hear the news, the plan about the new life. And that very day it was decided whether those who wanted to come should give their answers, you see. So it so happened that he had previously fixed the date, not knowing that he would not be present for the wedding. And he wanted to keep his word with Baba. So when he left his place to join Baba for the trip, his family didn't like the idea at all. And worst of all was his daughter, who taunted him, saying that the very fact that he was leaving her, knowing fully well that her wedding is so close, made her feel that he was not her father, and that touched him deeply, you see. And that was the thought, that night when he sat there was the night, you see, of her wedding, and he remembered her, and that's how he started sobbing. So all this is being narrated by Dr. Daulat Singh to Baba in answer to the query. So Baba said, whatever be the cause, what happened is that I somehow or other happened to go in the night and see you sobbing, and I cannot have a companion who has broken the new life order. So you'll have to leave. So there was no other go. One had to obey Baba's orders implicitly in new life. And we were all very surprised, you see, as to, he is the one who is absolutely innocent. He never went to Baba, never approached Baba with a long face. It was in the dead of the night, nothing was there. Nobody could prohibit anybody weeping within oneself. It was like being all alone. But now Baba having spotted him, and Baba says that he had to leave this company and go away from him. So that also touched us most. Not knowing that he would be the only one who would be having the credit of having, so to say, led the new life away from Baba, which would please Baba most. So, well, the verdict was that he had to leave the camp. So he left the camp. And it was a sight, you see, which touched us most. And the sight was such that we all would have started sobbing, you see, and we would have been sent back too. But somehow or other we controlled ourselves, and seeing the old man, you see, with a bundle of little belongings that was allowed there, so carrying that and going back home. But Baba told him before leaving that he should continue with his new life, away from Baba, not in the company of Baba, and he should go back home, stay in his house, go outside, first of all beg for food and eat that, not eat at home. He must beg for his food and lead the new life, keep all the conditions, keep himself completely cheerful, be very kind, not cruel to others or anything else. There were many, many conditions. So he continued with that. He went back home and we did not know what happened there. And we, of course, after the training period was over, Baba took us towards the north of India. We left the place. Occasionally we remembered Dr. Daulat Singh. We talked of him in presence of Baba. Baba also remembered him. And days passed by, weeks and months and a year and a half passed by and all that. In 1951, it so happened, I think, that we came back to the south of India again. And near about that place from where he was sent away, not exactly the same place, it was in Satara. One day we were sitting with Baba, the New Life companions, and in the midst of the conversation Baba points out on the roadside, and I look there and he tells me through his gestures to find out who the person is sitting there on the culvert there on the roadside. I go there and to my great surprise I find Dr. Daulat Singh sitting there. We met, we embraced, and he inquired whether Baba was here. I said yes, he was there, and that it was Baba who sent me. He was so happy, full of joy. And then he started narrating to me his this. I said, wait now, I must go and tell Baba about it. It will be a great day today, you see, to have you once again in our midst. And I went and told Baba. Baba called him there. And he was hungry. He continued his life begging for food and all that. So Baba, first of all, made him sit down, and then with his own hands, he gave food to Dr. Daulat Singh in his begging bowl. And then he said, how is it that he has left his home and has come here to such a distance begging for food and continuing his new life? And then he tells us the story. And the story is that when he returned home, it so happened that for a few days it was all right. The marriage had taken place, that is, the wedding had taken place, and they were happy to see him. He remained there. He didn't eat the food there. He went out and begged for his food on the streets. And for a day or two, of course, it was thought that, well, it was something very odd, but they didn't mind, the family. On the third day, naturally, the family remonstrated, and they said it doesn't look good for a family of our status that the head of the family should go out and beg for food. It's a reflection on the other members of the family. So he said, well, it's the order that I have accepted, and that's how I have to go out and live my life. He says, are you going to live that life all the years that you are here on earth? He says, yes, that's the order now that I have accepted. They didn't like the idea. They tried to bring some sense into his head. He says, well, if you want to beg for food at our place. You see, we are supposed to give you nothing of the sort. He had to carry out all the commands that were there of Baba, fixed for the companions of new life. So then they went out, the family went out to the heads of the community there. He belonged to the Sikh community. Dr. Daulat Singh, by the way, came from Kashmir during the days of the partition of India, and when India, the original India, was divided into Pakistan and Hindustan, India as it is called now. He was holding a very responsible position there, very influential man there. He was the medical practitioner, very well-known medical practitioner in Kashmir, Srinagar. He was also the mayor of the place, you see. And he was the one who was by the side of Chanji, Baba's personal secretary, you see, private secretary. You have heard of Chanji? Yeah, so he was there at the time when Chanji breathed his last. He was the one who arranged for his burial, funeral and burial over there in Kashmir. Chanji is buried in Kashmir. So he was close to Baba for so many years, but then he came closer still in new life, and closest during the ordeal that he passed through after he left Baba, you see. He had to leave Baba because of Baba's orders and stayed at home. So then the family members went and consulted the heads of the community, begging them to bring some sense into the head of this man, old man, who somehow or other seemed to have lost all senses of society and community, and he was bringing the community to disrepute by going out on the streets and begging for food from anybody's hands and anybody. They didn't like the idea. So there was a meeting held, and there he was admonished, you see, by the heads of the society. But he said that he was helpless and he could do nothing. He had to lead that life because he had determined to live such a life. The society was the heads of the society, community, were helpless. And it so happened that within a few days, he was actually driven out. Shooed out, as it is called here in India, means beaten with shoes and just was thrust out of his house, own house, by his own family. Kicked out of his house. Then he went and lived on the streets, continuing with his new life. He couldn't raise his finger, you see, to his family, because the conditions of new life were such that he had to be kind and generous and forgiving and charitable towards others. So it mattered very little. He had already left his home on 16th of October 1949 when Baba and his companions left for new life from Mehrabad. So it was nothing. It was just a sojourn over here. Well, he had come in obedience to Baba's order that he should go back to his place, to his family. So he went there. Now the family has driven him out. So he goes out and lives on the streets. On the streets there, the Sikh community in itself is such, it's very respectable, considered to be a very respectable community, very influential, very rich, and hardly one finds a beggar, you see. I haven't seen a single beggar, you see. So to find a Sikh beggar on the streets in that community, in the locality, is something very surprising. And the community could not stand that. So sections of community were upset with it, and they drove him out from that particular section of the locality, and then another locality and another locality, till a time came when he was thrown out of the whole of the city. He was threatened that he must leave the city. If he wanted to beg and continue this life, he was thrown out of the city, so he left the place. He went out. So then he started wandering from place to place. He wandered for many years, you see, for many months. It was a year and a half now, a year and three quarters, nearly 2 years. So during his wanderings, naturally, he wandered into that city called Satara, and Baba was there. So Baba pointed him out, and he contacted Baba, and that's how he told us the story. It was a very touching story. And how he had to bear all the insults and brunt. So Baba then told him that how blessed he was that he had observed the new life away from him. It was easy for his companions to be in new life while Baba was by their side. But it was most difficult under the circumstances that he was put in. And he said he was blessed that he had continued with the new life, and that Baba was very happy. Now Baba, on his own, absolves him from his new life, and he orders him to once again start the practice, medical practice, go back to his home, completely change the dress and change the way of life that he was leading, and be at home with his family practicing. So he went back. And just before he left Baba, Baba said that there will come a day when Baba on his own will visit his house. Till such time he shouldn't try to seek Baba. And Baba would very soon leave the place, he said, and continue his new life. So this Dr. Daulat Singh went back home, and it is reported later on by him, when we met him again, that he was accepted with open arms, that he had changed his way of life, and now that he became the earning member in the house, there was a complete change, you see. And the family who had driven him out, kicked him out of his own home, accepted him because he was the earning member, and that he seemed to be living in accordance with the, what do you call, the codes of the society, you see. And he was accepted in the family. But his heart was set on Baba, and he just knew that all what he did was he obeyed Baba. The society thought that, well, he had gone crazy and he had returned back to his normal senses. But he was much more normal than the whole society. And he was the one who obeyed Baba's instructions. Now it so happened that we continued with our new life. Baba came back and went away, left that place called Satara, and then we went to Hyderabad again for new life and all that, for the Manonash period. And it so happened that after he completed his Manonash period, then he went out, then he went went abroad, you see, in 1952 to the West, and he met with that accident, as you know, and he returned and he traveled and toured again. It was called, just in the fiery free life it was called, you see. So at that time I was driving the car, and one day we happened to be at the place, the same city where Dr. Daulat Singh was. So Baba on his own remembered the visit that was due there. And, well, I said, I can find out the house. I did not know the address, but it was so simple to find him out, because people in the town knew that crazy doctor, you see, who begged and who was driven out because he begged. So people knew in no time, within 5 minutes I could find his house, you see. I could get the address. And I took Baba there. It was early hours of the morning, and then I went and knocked at his door, and he was very happy to see me again. He asked whether Baba had come. I said, here he is there in the car waiting for you. He ran to Baba, and it was a sight to see, you see, how these two, the lover and the beloved, met. They embraced, they kissed each other, and then he took Baba inside his house, and there he just sat down and put his head on his lap, and he wept and wept through joy, through utter joy. And after some time, you see, a half an hour or so, pleasant exchanges of words, you see, Baba said it was time for him to leave. And he had completely forgotten, you see, everything. He didn't even give a thought to giving tea to Baba, or morning, it was morning time, it was time for breakfast or something. Anybody is received in the house, you see, is given, offered tea. And when Baba comes, it's the custom that one has to offer something. He had completely forgotten everything. He had lost his senses, so to say, in presence of Baba. So then he led Baba back to the car in obedience to Baba, saying that he wanted to leave. And then when Baba sat in the car, he got back his senses, feeling that now Baba is to leave. And that was a sight, you see. Oh, it was most touching, heart-rending feeling that we had about his separation. And he begged of Baba to just wait in the car till such time he'd bring tea and all that. He says, there's nothing more wanting. Baba was completely full with his love. That he was served very well, that he was happy to see him, that his heart and appetite were all appeased, so to say. Baba says that because of his love. And then he left. And after a short while, Dr. Daulat Singh also dropped his body and he died. So that's the story of Dr. Daulat Singh, who led new life conditions away from Baba. he was very fortunate. Not that he continued to live that life, new life. That's nothing, you see. That's just an obedience to that. But he was most fortunate because he was remembered when he left the companions there. He continued to be remembered, and he still continues to be remembered for his great love and sacrifice that in the cause of Baba. Yeah. Hearing stories, and even during his childhood days, he would tell us that he would go to a certain place, you see, where there would be a storyteller who would be telling stories, and there would be somebody coming to his house, an elderly person, telling, and that he was also fond of telling stories, and Baba was very fond of hearing stories. So he would look forward to that time when he would come, that man, the friend of his father, would come to the house and tell stories. He would sit there for long hours just hearing the stories. He was fond of really hearing good stories, and even during his seclusion, after he finished his work, you see, daily work, he would sometimes tell us to give a good story, tell him a good story. So we used to find out, or we used to keep ready some stories for him to hear. But there were occasions when he would tell us some stories too, you see. Because Baba, you know, with Baba it was always give and take. We gave him whatever we could give him, you see. And he would give us whatever he wanted us to have. So he was a good companion, a great friend and everything, you see. So he would also regale us with his stories. And one of the stories that he told us was this. That there was in Iran a very famous jeweler. You know, in the olden days, these people, you see, there were famous people who would go from place to place selling gems, diamonds and pearls and rubies and other things to the royalties, and go from one country to other, you see, and they would deal only in selling of gems. So that type of a jeweler. So, and there used to be a season for that person to go out. Now every year, for many years, this man would go out to sell his gems in the same country, and he was considered to be a very famous jeweler. In the same country there was a very famous thug, you know. You know who thugs are? The con men. And now, of course, these con men here, you see, the modern con men, they don't deal with your throats, you see. They deal with your sentiments and feelings and your innocence. But those were the days when the con men not only, you see, took you in confidence, but suppose if you didn't care to get yourselves into their confidence, they would strangle you, you see, kill you. So those were the people who were called thugs, you see, and are known as thugs here in India. Well, the thug, you see, had watched this jeweler for many years. And he thought that the time had come now to earn something from this jeweler. Now, jeweler being a jeweler, he had his merchandise with him, but that didn't mean that he was carrying a caravan load of merchandise with him, because gems are carried in small packets. And he's not going to carry a load of it or bale of merchandise. There was no need for a camel or an ass or anything. The jeweler always always traveled all alone on foot. He didn't care for any animals or anything. So when he set out on this tour for that season, he was met by a certain person who saluted him and says, "Good morning to you, sir." He says, "Good morning." He says, "May I accompany you on your tour wherever you are going? Because I am going in the same direction that you have taken now." He says, "You are welcome," the jeweler said. He says, The other man said that, well, he was very fortunate to have a good company in him. And they walked, and they walked. And Thug, me, after all, Thug is Thug, you see. He can talk a lot. So in his talks, he found out where his, where he wanted to go, you see, and where his halts were and all that. And somehow or other, he contrived in his talks in a way that, what a coincidence, he said, that he has to go all the distance, you see, with him. It means that he will be a companion for many, many months. So the jeweler, you see, says, well, he's very happy to have a company. He doesn't mind it. So they both went out. Every night, both of them would halt at the same inn, eat food, share food, talk and sleep. And next morning they would start. And then he would enter a certain city, you see, and he, the jeweler would go to his customers there and sell some gems and come back and all that. Everything was there. As usual, the thug would go out in the town and do things, you know. You know what he would do. You don't know. Well, he would cheat somebody, you see, and get something. That's what he would do, you see. And both joined, you see, and then they rested in the town, in the inn, and go. Every night, this thug, you see, would be after the packet, the diamond packets from the jeweler. He would try to search in vain, you see, and try to find out where he kept his gems, you see, that packet of gems. Days passed by, weeks passed by, but he couldn't lay his hand on the packet of gems. Sometimes he wondered whether he was the real person, whether he was the real jeweler, you see, or whether he was a fake and the real jeweler has gone far away from them. Well, it so happened that months passed by. He dared one night even to just probe under the pillow of the jeweler, you see, try to find out whether the packet was there or shoved anywhere, here, there. Nothing, nothing. The jeweler used to sleep soundly, you see, without any cares or anything of the sort. A day came when they had to part. The jeweler said, I have finished my journey and this is the end of my journey now. And I will just stay here for some days, you see, it's a big town and city. And the thief said, the thug said that it was also now time for him to part. But before he parted, the thug actually prostrated before the jeweler and says, Sire, says, you are my guru from today and I am determined not to harm you. I don't know whether you are aware who I am. So the jeweler said, well, you are my companion for so many months. So he says, no, I had some ulterior motive behind this. I am the greatest thug of Persia. I knew that you are the greatest of the jewelers, you see. Are you not, sir? He wanted to ascertain. He says, yes, I am the same one. He says, being myself the greatest thug, I tried my best to get that packet of gems from you. Every night I tried to search your belongings. Every night I did that. You slept well, you had no cares whatsoever, and at the same time you carried the burden with you all the while. So I have failed in all my tricks, you see. I have failed and now I surrender to you because you are my guru. You must show me where you used to keep the packet. You must tell me so that I may learn something from you. I said, my brother, why didn't you ask me before? I would have told you because I would have confided in you this. It's so simple. So what makes you feel so carefree in the night when with all that treasure that you own? This is simple. And the packet would always be in your satchel And you wouldn't care. No, I knew that you wouldn't want to care, you see, to search your satchel. And I would just put it there, deep down your satchel, you see, and go to sleep. So did you know, sir, that I would be searching you? He says, well, I knew that, I was aware that that it's no good depending on anybody, you see. I knew that. But I slept carefree. I was not made conscious that you were searching me all night or anything of the sort. But I slept carefree. Why? Because I knew that you wouldn't care to search your own satchel. Had you cared for it, you would have found it. But you went out in search, you see, all around me, all the places, you see, that you think of. This was the story told to us by Baba. And Baba said, this is how man, possessing the treasure in his own satchel, you see, goes out from place to place, wanders, tries to find out, you see, whether the treasure is here or there, and spends all his lifetime trying to find it out. But if he were to search in his own heart, it shines there. It is there. It is his. He possesses it, and yet he tries to find out elsewhere. That is the story that he told us. You seem to be very fond of Gustaji, you see. Yeah. You want to hear Gustaji's stories, right? So apart from the ones that we narrated the other day about his visit to Taj Mahal and his traveling with Baba, you see, in the railway compartment there, where he got himself behind the luggage, got himself locked in a lavatory. There is another story. I don't know whether you all are aware of it or not. Gustaji was very, very fond of mangoes, besides being fond of cheese, you see. Cheese stood number one, you see, in his likes. Then came mangoes, fresh, ripe mangoes. He loved them very much. And sometimes when Baba would tour, you see, to places where mangoes were to be found in abundance, or where we stayed, you see, in some Baba lover's house where there were mango trees and fruits were ripe, especially during the summer months, well, that was something very, very... it was a sort of a windfall for Gustaji, I should say, to have mango trees laden with mangoes in the house. But sometimes there would be a dearth of mangoes during the mango season because Baba wouldn't go to any place at that time. And naturally, the mandali would be given the mangoes from the parcels that were received, you see. So, to the lot of mandali, there would be one or two or three mangoes during a season, so to say. It so happened once that we were somewhere here, in our, you know the place we went, Aurangabad, the other day. So there, if I remember right, it might be somewhere nearby, Aurangabad or near Hyderabad or Secunderabad, I forget now, but it's there, that somebody had brought mangoes to Baba, and Baba distributed a mango to each of the mandalis, good-sized mango. Gustaji, being very fond of it, and as it is usual with the Indians, you see, anything that is offered on the plate, you see, and of which you are very fond of, the person, an Indian, would eat that particular thing last. I don't know whether it's the same practice in the West or not, but normally here in India what we find is, now suppose so many things are served in a on a platter, and you take things, you see, you take your things, but if you have a particular liking for a certain dish, what you would do is eat the rest of the thing and then keep that particular dish to taste it last, you see. Likewise, the whole day was spent and Gustaji thought of eating the mango undisturbed in the night when there would be nobody around him. Gustaji always liked to do such things, you see. Out of the way, unusual. It so happened that that very day in the morning, Dr. Deshmukh, you heard of Dr. Deshmukh? From Nagpur had arrived. Vacation time, being summer months. So he was permitted to stay near Baba on the tour there. Being hot and summer, Dr. Deshmukh wanted to go and sleep on the terrace, right on the top of the bill of the house. You see, there was a terrace. So Mandali dispersed for the night. Each one slept at his own his place, you see, the spot that Baba had fixed. But this man who had come as a visitor, Dr. Deshmukh, he selected his place on the terrace there to sleep. Now, it so happened that in the dead of the night, Gustaji thought of the mango. And after having washed the mango, made it clean, then he squatted on the steps of the house you see there and sat down, settled himself comfortably, undisturbed from any atmosphere or any companions or anything, and he started, you see, to relish the mango. Just then it so happened it started drizzling, you see. So as it started drizzling, of course Gustaji was there on the steps. He didn't care for this because he was covered. But it disturbed Dr. Deshmukh, who was on the terrace. He was sleeping there with his bedding roll spread out. So he thought that it might pour down, so there won't be time for him to get down. So what, he rolled up his bedding roll, and then he got a second thought that if he were to carry that huge bedding roll down the stairs, it would take a lot of time, because the stairs to the terrace were from outside the building, and he might get wet. So just then he thought of having rolled the bedding roll, he thought of just throwing it, dropping it down from the terrace, you see, so that he could then go down, run down the steps, pick it up and then sleep. Little knowing that the spot that he had selected to drop the bedding roll was the place where Gustaji was relishing his mango, you see. So in the dead of the night, what Gustaji finds was, while he is feeling completely at home and settled and quiet with his mango, and he has sucked, you see, twice or thrice and is relishing, and his happiness is at its zenith, you see, all of a sudden from the darkness comes the thunderbolt, you see, of something huge just falling in front of him. And the next morning he describes to us his feelings, you see. He said he became a tennis ball, a golf ball, he says. The fright made him jump so high that he almost touched the ceiling, you see. And he did not know what's the matter. He thought that there was some witchcraft here in the houses. All of a sudden, what has dropped, and what, he finds a bedding roll. Whose is it? From where has it come? He completely forgot about Dr. Deshmukh's visit. Then comes Dr. Deshmukh at the sight, you see. He says, "Hello, Gustaji, what are you doing?" Gustaji, having observed silence, naturally can't say anything, can't express his feelings for this man's rudeness, you see, to have dropped the bedding from the top. So the next day, there's a court martial, so to say. He calls the Mandali, you see, and tells Baba this whole story before Baba. And Baba enjoyed it very much. He says, Gustaji says, but this is criminal on the part of Dr. Deshmukh to have dropped such a heavy thing, you see. Suppose if it had fallen right on my neck, I would have been a dead person this morning. So Baba, to tell Dr. Deshmukh, warn him that he shouldn't do such thing next time. But at the same time, we all enjoy the story very much. Whereas Gustaji could not enjoy his mango that night.